Welcome to Martha Runs the World, a podcast with a new take on running, fitness, and all things health-oriented. I'm Martha Hughes, your host, and each week I present a new topic that is of interest to all runners. Hi, and welcome to episode 244 of Martha Runs the World. Right now, we're just at the cusp of summer. We're moving into fall. Things are starting to get cooler in most parts of the country and the northern hemisphere, and people are preparing and looking towards winter. Yes, the W word. It will start to get cold in most places. Now, in Northern California, where I am in the Bay Area, we'll get a heat streak in early October, and then it will all of a sudden get cold. That's kind of how it is. Last year was an anomaly year with El Nino rains. It rained and it rained and it rained and it rained. But I don't expect that to be the same this year. Hopefully we'll get rain, but hopefully maybe not quite as much. It was nice to have rain, but I don't know. It was a lot of rain. But there will be cold weather, there will be snow in many parts of the country, and we need to prepare for it. One of the things that in running, you can run on snow or you can try a new way of running or a new sport that to help you with running on snow. Snowshoeing is one of those things you can try. My guest this week is Bob Dion, who's the founder of Dion NeviTrack Snowshoes. He is a runner, and he ran for many, many years. He did ultras and trail running and all that, and he tried out snowshoeing, and he loved it. He lives in a very cold part of the country in Massachusetts, and he tried out snowshoeing, and he loved it. But he wanted to design a snowshoe that was really good for runners, and he did. They were called Dion Snowshoes. Now he's combined with Dion NeviTrack Snowshoes, and they're American-made. They're designed by his company. They're manufactured in the U.S., so it's a really good company to support. And I'm very happy to have him as my guest, and he'll talk about his company, and he'll talk about why runners should snowshoe this winter. So here is Bob Dion. Well, you welcome to the show, Bob Dion. He started Dion Snowshoes, which is now called the Dion NeviTrack Snowshoes. And we're going to learn all about why we should take up snowshoeing this winter. Hi, Bob. How are you?
Oh, good. Good to be here.
Great. Well, thank you so much for joining me. First of all, snowshoes. Why did you start Dion Snowshoes so many years ago?
Well, I was a trail runner, and in the winter, yeah, I could run on snowmobile trails some of the time, you know, just really enjoyable. You didn't have all the, the roots, rocks, mud. You didn't have the pounding, and also just running on the roads and the puddles and slop in the winter was kind of aggravating. So it's nice just to go out for hours on a snowy, you know, snow-covered trail, and but you were still pretty limited on, you know, which trails, and you still had the snowmobiles, you know, going by at pretty high speed. A friend of mine mentioned that he was putting on a snowshoe series, you know, and it was, you know, four snowshoe races on the same trails, that nice little single track that we had trail racing on. Yeah, it sounded fun, but I was training pretty serious, so it wasn't really a priority. But I think the second year he did it, I showed up for one of the races, and they had loaner snowshoes, but it was kind of a mixed bag. I got there late, so I ended up getting a big pair of backcountry snowshoes to race in. So anyway, we started the race about 4 miles, and there was this high school kid with a pair of the small racing snowshoes. But he and I just kept going back and forth. You know, he'd be, you know, breaking trail, then he'd fall and I'd go by him. So it was a lot of, you know, it was a pretty good race. I ended up winning it. But still, it wasn't, you know, it it really didn't fit in my schedule, you know, to work that hard for 4 miles when I could have, you know, done 20 or 30 that day. I just thought, you know, it was novel idea and it was fun. But the following year he had, you know, a couple more races, and I showed up for the first one of those and kind of decided that it was such extreme difference. You know, you're working so much harder, and time wise, to cover 4 miles on snowshoes was quite a bit longer than, you know, 4 miles, on the roads. And it was a good workout. So I kind of switched my schedule to where I was going to do all the snowshoe races, but use them as a hard training day, you know, basically short, intense. So, you know, once I kind of adopted that, mindset, I, started, you know, doing the, you know, every other week. But, the problem was the snowshoes were pretty horrible. You know, we'd bang our ankles. People were taking cardboard and taping it to the inside of their ankles, you know, just to survive. And then you had to wait like a week or two to heal up before, and then luckily the races were spaced every couple of weeks. But anyway, I kind of decided that, you know, at the time I was designing lab instruments and such, for a small company. So I knew purchasing, I knew the engineering, and kind of decided that, you know, maybe I'm just going to make my own snowshoes. They can't be that hard to make. So, you know, looking at them, but it turned out, yeah, they're pretty damn complicated. Basically, you know, if you were running in nice fluffy snow all the time or hiking, a snowshoes is a pretty simple thing, but we're running horrible conditions. You know, we're in the Northeast, so you might have good snow at one elevation and then ice at another, and then windswept rocks and ledges. And also a lot of the courses had road crossings and such. So, the snowshoes I had, everybody loved. I started selling them, and, it was kind of fun because I'd be in a race with people and looking around, and probably 60% had my snowshoes on. And, if there was a problem, somebody broke something, you know, I'd stop and see, was it my snowshoe or was it, you know, was there a problem with mine or was it somebody else's? And most of the time it was a mixture. None of the snowshoes would really hold up to the conditions we were racing. So, anyway, I kind of got some really good feedback on the design, at every race. So we constantly kept improving it and making changes. And then we'd see how that worked in the next race.
That is really, I mean, you would have to pretty well, almost go from scratch back then, right? They didn't really have the type of, snowshoes you wanted.
Yeah. Well, at the time there was a couple of models or other brands that had a 22 inch, you know, small snowshoe, but it was basically a big, heavy 22 inch, you know, something attached to your foot. A lot of people then, the bindings were horrible. So you got all this movement. That's why you'd bang your ankles. Yeah. So our design made sure we didn't have any of that movement. And then you had the durability, you know, we had to solve those problems. But at that time, the National Association, which, you know, puts on the national championship for snowshoe racing, they were voting on changing the size of the snowshoe from 25 inch down to 22, just because people were using those 22 inch and it wasn't really fair, if other people were using 25. So basically it was good for us because we were just starting the design and we could make them any size we wanted. So when they went to the 21 inch, it was great because, all of a sudden we're like right out of the gate, you know, making good racing snowshoes.
Great timing then. Very, very cool. Yeah. Why should runners try snowshoeing this winter?
Well, the biggest thing is that you're not fighting the traffic along the edge of the road and puddles and, risking, you know, hitting a patch of ice or whatever. And also, if you go out for, say, 20 miles on a Saturday, it's cold, your muscles are sore or cold, everything's, it's almost like your shoes are hard plastic. You get that different sound even, you know, the click, 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 you know. It's, and there's a lot of pounding. And it's also just really hard to get out the door. I mean, if you get a 20-mile-an-hour wind and you're going down the road, 20-mile-an-hour headwind is pretty brutal. Or in the woods, you don't really have the wind. The trees are blocking it. Also, you don't have the pounding because, you know, the snow's soft. So you're working a lot harder. You're using a lot more energy, a lot more muscles. But if you did a 20-mile on the roads that day, you'd be pretty sore Sunday. If you did the equivalent or even 20 miles on snowshoes, a couple hours later, you're good as new. So you get all the good effects without the negative.
Yeah, that's true. You do. And even if you do stick to trails, you still, there are going to be a lot of trails that are going to be closed to you because they're too much snow. And with snowshoes, you can just keep going, right on going.
Yeah, there's places like in the Adirondacks where they'll fine you. I forgot what the fine is, but substantial. If you hike in the winter without snowshoes, you got to at least have them with you. And also, a lot of people, if they're out cross-country skiing or other people using the trails, really hate it if you're out there post-holing and messing up the trail. So we do still, there's times where if you're anywhere near a cross-country skier or ski trail, they really don't like snowshoers. Mm-hmm. But that's changed now that they realize that we're packing their trail. And you go out in April and the only snow in the woods is this strip of a foot wide, foot high snow from the snowshoers.
We'll be right back.
Hey, quick question for you. Are you someone who wants to be fit, healthy, and happy? And what if I told you you could get your dream body by simply just listening to a podcast? I'm Josh.
And I'm KG, and we're the hosts of the Fit, Healthy, and Happy podcast.
Listen, we get it. Fitness isn't easy. Carbs, no carbs.
Just stop, okay? It doesn't have to be that complicated. And that's why we made this podcast. We get straight to the facts so you can become your best you.
So the way to check us out is click the link in the show notes or search Fit, Healthy, and Happy podcast on any of the major podcast platforms. We'll see you soon.
Yeah, it's a lot different now. And you talk about post-holing. Where's the fun in that if you're going out hiking? That's not fun at all. When I've gone out hiking or trail running and you just happen to come across a patch of snow, that is no fun at all, just having to do that. You know, that just, you don't want to do that for any length of time more than you have to.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we used to have a... Well, we called it the Idita Pub, and it was basically before I was making snowshoes. We'd meet up, carpool out 20 miles away from the pub, and then we'd run the Appalachian Trail up over the mountains in waist-deep snow without snowshoes. And, yeah, it was brutal, but it was a thing. You know, it's like, you know, you get to the pub at the end and, you know, drink beer and talk about it.
Talk about your war yeah. stories from the day.
Yeah.
Oh, we did a lot of crazy stuff back then, didn't we?
But it's much nicer. And also the traction. You know, I used to run the highest peak in Massachusetts, Greylock. It was all groomed for snowmobiles. So it was basically like an indoor track, but without the traction. So I'd run that. And it's hard. You wouldn't post hole, but it was, you know, 30 miles over and back, you know, up to the top of the summit, you know, 3,400 feet and then down the other side. And we actually raced it and everything. But you still need a trip. So people would put, you know, screws in their shoes and, you know, whatever to get traction. But with snowshoes, you've got all that. And ours are small and light, so you don't really know you have a snowshoe on either. You know, you don't have any of the movement. You've got the cushioning. You got the, yeah. It's basically, it makes even running on snowmobile trails just much more fun and easier.
So that is very cool. So do you have different styles that runners can get, or what if a beginning if a runner wants to try snowshoeing, what would be the first type of snowshoe they would want to get for snowshoeing in the winter?
Well, one is that our company, yeah, I'm a runner. I design the snowshoes. I use the snowshoes. Other companies are all marketing. So if they see, oh, there's 60% of the snowshoers are women, we'll make a baby blue and it's a women's model. Or we'll tell them, well, it's narrow, or it's this, it's, you know, it's, and it's just marketing. So the other thing they've done is that if you weigh 100 pounds, you need this size. If you weigh 150, you need this size. And if you weigh 200, you need an even bigger one. And they kind of treat it like it's a canoe. So you go out on the lake, and if your canoe's too small, you're going to sink to the bottom. So you got to have just the right size, and you stay right on top of the fluffy snow. And that's kind of bull. Yeah, it doesn't work that way. What you're doing with any snowshoe, whether you're hiking, backcountry, running, is get the smallest you can get away with. And also, you're not going to – they call it flotation, which just to be kind of the way I am, I actually did a video where I went off the back of my brother's boat in August with snowshoes on to see if they float. And just to kind of prove the point, it's not a canoe. So basically, if you're running, get the smallest one you can get away with, or go down to the legal smallest, which is our, you know, model 120 and 121, because it has to be 120 square inches. And that's why our model numbers are the square inches of the frame. But if you're hiking or you're bigger, then go a little bit bigger. The only time it matters is when out here, what we get is powder, then a crust, and then powder, then a crust. Mm. If it's just powder, nothing's going to stay on top. You're just packing it as you go. If it's hard, a lot of times you only need snowshoes, or you're only going to sink. Like I say, you're going to post hole, but if it's 4 feet of snow, you're not going to sink 4 feet ever. Right. So what you want to do is just pack the snow as you go. But if you get that layers of crust and you have too big of a snowshoe, you're going to be on top, break through. If you have too small a snowshoe, you're still going to post hole. You're going to, you know, pop a hole, step. And if you're tall, whoever's following you is going to have to jump from hole to hole. So what you want to do is get, say, a 25 inch. And what that does is it connects the holes. So you're making a trench. What people can do too is, if you look at any snowshoe race videos or even the pictures, look at the front of the pack where they're knee deep in the snow. And then look at the people in the back. They're in a trench. It's packed. Which brings up another thing, is that unlike other sports, okay, if you have a track race, the 5 minute miler is gone. The 6 minute miler's falling behind. The 10 minute miler is way back, and it gets more spread out through the race, whatever distance. If you get on the trails, you're going to find where a 5 minute miler might, depending on the trail, the 5 minute miler might slow to a 6 or a 7. The 10 minute miler isn't going to slow much more because he's already slow. If you get in snowshoeing, the 5 minute miler might go to a 10. So the 10 minute miler, it's packed. So they're not going to go much slower. They might go to an 11. And I've been in races where the lead pack was maybe 100 yards ahead of the last place that was walking for an entire, like that 4 mile race. The front people were taking turns breaking trail every 30 seconds, and nobody could stay in front for more than 30 seconds. So the people in the back are just walking along, watching the people in the front falling over and, you know, trying to break trail. So there's such an advantage, the slower back of the pack people don't think that, oh, snowshoeing is going to be so hard for me because, you know, regular running is hard. No, you got so much advantage. Yeah, you're always going to have nice packed snow. There's times where you get a dry powder where it gets stirred up, but still, it's nowhere near as hard for the back of the pack people as the front.
Boy, I like that. That is very, very cool. I like that the back of the pack has the advantage. That is really, really cool. Yeah, you know, I want to go back to something that you said, and it's a problem with shoe companies, with running shoe companies, is that they seem to always think that us women or females like powder, like pastel colors. It's like, no, some of us like dark colors. So they have to think out of the box sometimes. But
yeah, that's marketing.
Yep. Yeah, I worked in marketing and advertising for a while. I know that they're very, they don't think more than just a little bit. I'm not even going to get started in that. They didn't like my opinions because they didn't fit their little boxes. So they didn't appreciate that very much. Let me see. So now safety tips. Now safety tips on the trail for snowshoeing, are they different than like if you're running on a trail? Is it the same kind of safety tips that you have snowshoeing?
Well, the thing with snowshoeing is, let's say you've got a really nasty, you know, hilly roots, rocks, you know, mud, you know, all kinds of things, and you're twisting, turning. In the winter, depending on if you're the first out or other people have been there, or if you're back at a pack, but basically there aren't any roots, rocks, mud. It's white and it's packed, and you could be on a steep downhill where in the summer you might have to grab a tree or figure out how to slow down to take a turn. With snowshoes, you're sinking enough with every step that basically if you got to take a turn, your foot makes a turn. You know, your foot digs in just enough that it's much easier to turn. And if you fall, you're not going to get hurt. So
that's a good point. I like that. That sounds like a lot of fun. Now, does Dion Nevi Trek, do they still sponsor races in ski areas?
Yeah, we sponsor quite a few. And what we do in the Northeast, especially, okay, and in Ontario, is most events will have a bin or two of loaner snowshoes. So, you know, the people that want to try it, just make sure you reserve ahead of time. A lot of places they'll charge $5 or whatever. But basically, you don't have to go out and spend, you know, $200-$300 on a pair of snowshoes and worry about showing up and having people look at you funny. Like, you know, why do you have those? Or, you know, you really shouldn't have got those, or, you know, whatever. It just takes that out of it. That's when I started, that's what happened. I'd borrow the snowshoes and you pretty quickly, like, you know, find out, do you like it? Do you like the snowshoe? You might just hate being out in the cold and, you know, save your money, then don't buy snowshoes.
Yeah.
But if you like it, it's good to look around and you can see what other people are wearing, what they're doing. And then it's somewhat like track or cross country, is if you want to race it, there's a lot of strategy involved, because everything you do wrong, it's like, you know, running a 100-miler. If you make a mistake, you're gonna pay for it. Almost any race is like that. But with snowshoeing, is if you go out too fast on snowshoes, you're really gonna pay the price. And it's almost impossible to go out into a race and not go out too fast. Because the perception is, yeah, you know, this is okay. You know, I know my pace, and then the gun goes off and, you know, within 100 yards, you got to pull over. And then trying to recover with snowshoes on, you know, is really hard. So what you learn is like where to pass, how everybody's got their strategy. If you're good on an uphill, you're good on a downhill. But also the worst thing in the world is you can get 4 or 5 people ahead of you walking on an uphill and you're stuck behind them and your competition could be in front of that bunch just pulling away. So you quick pull over to the side, floor it, you know, start pick up the pace, but they're in a packed groove and you're in knee deep snow, trying to pass them. And even if you get by them, as soon as you pull back over, your shot. Now you're really regretting, and you feel like an idiot because now you're walking slower than they are behind you and you just passed them. So there's a lot of that. But I've seen guys that'll go out and check the course ahead of time and look at certain trees. That's where I want to pass, you know, and, you kind of learn your abilities, pretty quickly. The other thing is, probably 80% of everybody in any race is overdressed. Again, you know, looking at pictures and like, you're going to see where the gun goes off and everybody's got the hats, gloves, you know, a vest or a coat or something. And by the finish, everybody's down to a t-shirt and carrying all their clothes.
That reminds me of cross-country skiing, because I remember when I was an avid downhill skier for when I was young, and we tried cross-country skiing a couple times, and you just, it's such a workout, and we would like wear the big down coats and everything, and by halfway through it was like, no, can't wear these things.
Yep.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, the kind of the thing is like, you know, really, if you're comfortable standing around the beginning of a snowshoe race, then yeah, you're way overdressed. But the other thing too is to make sure that I've made this mistake a lot, because I'm always like working the races and, you know, talking shop. When you get finished, you're going to be really warm, really sweaty. Get changed quick before you start talking or drinking beer and all that. But we'll go out on days where driving to a race, the weather, it's wind chills, you know, deadly. Don't go out any, you know, stay in the house. You know, it's horrible wind chill. You get to a race and you finish the race and people are all standing around in t-shirt drinking beer. So, and none of these people probably would have even gone out and trained that day, or especially done a race, never mind in the snow. It's just, it makes winter suck less.
Yeah.
It's and cross country skiers too. You mentioned that a lot of our customers are cross country skiers, but they got older. And all of a sudden, if you get on a slight downhill on cross country skis and you're in your 60s, like I am, it's scary. I don't want to fall down, a downhill. So snowshoes, you don't have to worry. You know, you walk up a hill, you walk down a hill. It's not just much more forgiving. It's a lot safer than, you know, skiing and such.
Yeah, it is. I kept injuring myself. I was in my 40s. I kept injuring myself downhill skiing. So I said, okay, I'm just going to run all the time. Plus, it got really expensive. I mean, Lake Tahoe, just downhill skiing was just outrageously expensive. So I said, I'm spending all this money on downhill skiing once a week when I could run almost every day. So I switched. That was the end of that. But yeah. That's a really, really good tip about being sweaty when it's cold outside, to get changed quickly, get out of those and get into some warm, dry clothes in cold weather. That is really, really an important tip. And some of us don't remember that because you've got the endorphins going and maybe you have an alcoholic beverage or something, and then you just completely forget about it.
Yep. And the thing too is, at racing, you go to a snowshoe race, it's the same people as a trail race. So they're not going to like finish and go home.
No.
You know, they're going to hang out and talk. And yeah,
it's true. It's true. It's very true. Yeah. We're very sociable people, which is why it's so awesome. What's your favorite distance? What was your favorite distance to race in snowshoe races?
Generally, the longer, the better. A 5K on snowshoes is really painful. and if you do go out too fast or any, you know, it's like there's no time to really recover or make up for it. So what I found is that, you know, if you get out to, my favorite's probably around 10 miles. You know, they've got snowshoe races up to 100 miles and snowshoe marathons. But the problem with that is that, you know, first of all, that you're dealing with, you know, horrible conditions. You know, it could be freezing rain while you're out there, anything. And also, if footwear wise. Some people, if you have, say, too thick of socks or whatever, you're cutting off circulation. Mm-hmm. So now you're running, the longer you're out there, you're running that risk. And also, like trail running versus road running, if you're doing a marathon on snowshoes, you're not going to be doing it in 3 hours or four. Yeah. So you're going to be out there so much longer, working so much harder. I've done it, but it's, it not my favorite. And I think for the most part is that it's, winter's too unpredictable. You could have a beautiful Saturday with, 30 degrees and sunny, and next day could be, 20 and, with a wind chill. So, and like I say, and you're working hard, shedding layers. And so I don't mind training long. I'll go out for 6 hours on a snowshoe, training run, and that's fine because you can carry clothes and change and, eat and drink. But for races, I think, right around a half marathon, 15K to half marathon is a really good distance. You can settle in early and just gradually just keep picking people off just because a lot of people go out too fast.
That's
and
true.
And it's also, a good workout, but good recovery. So, you get done. And again, half marathon on roads or even trails is going to beat you up. And a half marathon, on the snows, you finish feeling really, really tired. But an hour later, you could do it again.
Yeah. I was going to say, it hasn't wiped you out for the whole day. So what's your favorite après snowshoe treat?
Beer. but basically, we've had where, sometimes it's all, especially with the Western Mass series when it's started, everybody'd be hanging around a, fire barrel and you'd have hot soup and all that.
Very cool. Very cool. Thank you so much for joining me. This has been a lot of fun. And really, I know more about snowshoes than I ever have and before. And it actually makes me want to plan a trip up to the mountains to snowshoe. So I'm going to have to plan that in somehow this winter. Because we have a lot of really cool places in the Sierra Nevadas to do that.
Surprisingly, there's very few snowshoe races. The Northeast by far has, tons of them. At one point, there was probably 100 snowshoe races within driving distance. But also, everything around here is within driving distance. So, unlike when there was qualifiers for nationals, people out west would have to drive sometimes 5-6 hours to go to a qualifier. And then if they didn't qualify, there wasn't another one anywhere nearby. There could have been one in every state, but, it's could be 10 hours to get to the next state and do a race.
True.
And also I found is like in Bend, for instance, when the nationals were there, people in town could be biking on the roads and running the trails with no snow. Why were they going to go up into the top of the mountains and snowshoe?
That's true. It's just for me, it's not even even racing. It's just going out and just doing it for training. It's such a good workout.
Oh yeah, when I got to Western States 100, I'm amazed that they're just opening a lot of roads, there's it could be 10, 15 feet of snow out in the woods and I'm thinking geez, these people should be snowshoeing.
I know. They had a huge amount of snow this year.
Oh, this
my
year
gosh.
Crazy. Yeah.
It was crazy. It was like the first year in a long time. I wish I was still skiing, but I don't miss paying all that money for it. So it's okay.
Well, that's the thing too, with skiing, even cross country skiing, trail fees, the equipment. I've got people that they'll complain about, $250 snowshoe. but their running shoes are close to that now.
That's true.
Yeah, or they, or they'll complain about the $250 snowshoe and they'll be wearing Under Armour and all this, you know.
No, your prices,
$200 coats, but
your prices are very reasonable for snowshoes, and it's great quality and made in the USA too. I wanted to say that too.
But also you can just go out your back door, or pretty much anywhere, go to a state park.
That's right. That's right. You don't really need, you don't need expensive lessons to learn how to use them either.
Nope.
I mean, really to know how to ski or to know how to snowboard properly, you got to take at least a lesson or two.
Yeah, there's a lot of technique, and but it's basically running. You know, it's if you can walk, you can snowshoe. If you can, if you run, there's no difference, unless you got some horrible snowshoes. Then then you got to watch, because the snowshoe will have its own swing or rhythm, and if you speed up, the snowshoe has its own little delay. So again, our design got rid of all that, anything that I didn't like, anything that hurt my racing, where I was annoyed because the snowshoe, if I turn, I want the snowshoe to turn. I don't want to wonder if I'm going to get around a corner, or if you're on the side of a hill, you don't want to keep sliding sideways down a hill. So I want to make sure, you've got the right traction, the right size frame and the right binding. And again, we made ours modular, because again, it's sports equipment. If you go into a bike shop, you can't buy a bike for somebody else. What size frame, what kind of frame, where are you riding? Are you riding hills? You can change all these components to what's going to work most of the time. And then if you find that, you were never thought about, mountain biking, you got a road bike, it's a different instrument. So what ours is, if you have a racing frame and you want to go to Tahoe, you can change the frame, keep your binding and cleat, just change it over, and then go out backcountry in Tahoe without buying a whole nother set of snowshoes. I was in a race one time where I had not enough traction early on, but I had like the standard cleat, and there was way more snow than we thought. Because we started in an open field that was pretty packed. But once we got up into the hills, came back around on the first loop, I stopped, I changed the cleat, and I had dropped from like third place to maybe 10th. I changed the cleat and moved right back up into third. And people are like, well, can you do that? And, well, I can.
Just did. All right. Well, that sounds awesome. Well, so I'm going to have all the company link on the website so that they can check it out and hopefully use your snowshoes for training this year so that they don't miss a day of training because of the snow.
Yep.
And that's Dion Nevy Trek Snowshoes and Bob Dion, the founder of the company. And thank you so much, Bob, for joining us. Appreciate it very much. And good luck on everything.
Yeah, great. It was good to be here.
Okay. Yep. Bye-bye.
Thank you very much, Bob. It was fun having you on. It was fun talking about snowshoeing and winter. I'm never one to really look forward to snow and winter and the cold. I do like the food of winter. I like the food of fall. And I like to hunker down and bundle up and all that stuff, but it's hard running in cold weather. It really is. And I'm much more of a warm weather type person, to be honest. But I do plan to move to a more mountainous area, and it will be cold part of the year, so I got to get used to that. So yes, this is something that will be part of my life. So yes, I need to get used to that. So I will be doing another episode. I did one when I first started. It was one of my very first episodes. I was talked about winter running, and I will be doing another one. Well, I'm going to combine it with a race report that I'll be doing in November. So I'll also talk about winter running and do some updates and do some more stuff that I didn't talk about in the first episode that I did, because that was a long time ago. Yeah, it's time to update that. And I'll talk about that more as it gets along. And that should be interesting. next week, this upcoming Saturday, I have my first, well, it's my second race since surgery, but it's the first race I'm actually going to be running in. I probably won't run the whole race because it's a 12-hour timed race. I'll be walking most of it, but I will be running part of it anyway, so that's going to be fun, and I'm looking forward to that. That's going to be just east of Sacramento. The weather looks pretty good. It looks like either it's going to be around 80 degrees, maybe 85, but it doesn't going to be look like it's going to be 100 degrees like it was last year. Last year when I did Ride to Walk, it was so hot. It was 100 degrees. It was just, it was really, really hot. That kept my mileage way, way down, much less than I wanted it to be. So I do have A, B, and C goals. So as long as I hit C goal, I'll be happy. And I'll talk more about that next week when I get back, because I'm only going to be gone 3 days. Can't really afford to do it right now. I'm still paying off medical bills, and until I get that paid off, I really can't afford a long trip. I do plan a longer trip next February when I will go down to Boulder City in Nevada to do the Bootleg Boogie, and you should join me. I'll put a link on that in the website, martharenzaworld.com. It's a really cool race. It's a brand new race that's going to be happening in Boulder City in the first weekend of February. There are going to be lots of distances. They're long distances, though. No short races in this race, or in this day of races, I should say. They're longer distances. It's going to be a lot of fun. It's a beautiful area. It's right near Hoover Dam. It's going to be fun, and a lot of cool people are going to be there. So I hope to see you there, and we can meet up and chat and run together. All right, so that is it today, and the website is martharunsaworld.com. If you want to email me, it is martharunsaworld@gmail.com. And until next week, let's tie up our shoelaces and go for a run.